This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of July 14th, 2019. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature. I catch up with Dermod Travis of Integrity BC to discuss China's influence on local politicians and proposals by some local politicians for much-needed checks and balances in local governments. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or should we call John McCallum Traitor Jack, and Richmond Liberal MP Joe Pescosolito Traitor Joe? McCallum is Justin Trudeau's former immigration minister who was hired and fired as the ambassador to China. He is up to his hijinks again, hijinks that earned him the nickname Mao Callum. You might remember that back in January, McCallum held a news conference for Chinese language media near Toronto and offered advice on how Meng Wanzhou could avoid extradition to face fraud charges in the United States. 2 days later in Vancouver, he said it would be great if the U.S. dropped the case against the Huawei CFO. Trudeau punted McCallum the next day. Last week, he told the South China Morning Post that China should ease up on Canada because the Liberal government would be kinder to it than the Conservative Party if the Conservatives win the October election. This was as close as a Canadian has come to Donald Trump's notorious 2016 "Russia, are you listening?" moment. Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland called it unacceptable, and Conservative leader Andrew Scheer used stronger language to condemn Mao Callum. As for Pescosolito, Traitor Joe, Global News revealed photographs last week of him with gun store owner and former People's Liberation Army soldier Rongchang Tiger Wan, a band from casinos former massage parlor owner Paul King Jin, and Chen Yong Tao, a local agent of the Chinese Communist Party. Pescosolito says he didn't know who they were. Pescosolito has a habit of attracting attention at Chinese community events. He famously wore a communist red scarf at a Chinese flag raising outside Vancouver City Hall in 2016. He said afterward that he didn't know what the scarf meant. When will Trudeau himself tell Traitor Jack, both publicly and privately, to shut up? Will Trudeau refuse to let Traitor Joe run in the October election? It may be too much to ask for Trudeau to get tough with China and for him to get tough with Communist Party sympathizers in his party's own tent. He once famously admired China as a basic dictatorship. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. Kyoto reports in the Japan Times. Japanese man wanted for running illegal manga site detained in Philippines. A man wanted in Japan for allegedly infringing copyrights by running an illegal manga website has been detained in Manila. The man, identified by the Philippines Bureau of Immigration as Romy Hoshino, 27, is suspected of operating Manga Mura, which allowed visitors to read pirated comics. He is expected to be deported to Japan. In April 2018, the Japanese government deemed it appropriate for internet service providers to block users' access to Manga Mura and to other websites in order to address internet piracy. Nearly $3 billion has been lost due to copyright infringement. Alex Mann reports in ABC News Australia on the Golden Nugget Affair. The annual Uluru Camel Cup is an outback camel race that combines two of the biggest vulnerabilities for race fixing, the allure of prize money and a near total lack of oversight. Despite attracting prize pools valued in the thousands of dollars, camel racing in the Northern Territory is largely unregulated. Integrity issues are a matter for the police. The Northern Territory government confirmed the Uluru Camel Cup had a permit to conduct the Calcutta auction. In other states where camel racing exists, such as Queensland, race fixing is a crime punishable by up to 10 years imprisonment. And Jesse Pearson in the LA Times reports, fly fishing for sewer salmon in the Los Angeles River. The common carp, aka sewer salmon, mud marlin, pond pig, river rabbit, dumpster dolphin, ghetto grouper, and septic steely. trekking to the nearest freely flowing stretch of the LA River to fish, with all the slow hours of waiting and watching that the sport entails, remains a prime way to befriend nature. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. Daniel Beekman reports in the Seattle Times, Washington State Supreme Court unanimously upholds Seattle's pioneering democracy vouchers. Democracy vouchers allow residents to contribute taxpayer money to qualifying political candidates. Under the program approved at the ballot in 2015 and first used in 2017, the city raises $3 million annually in property taxes. Each election cycle, voters receive four $25 vouchers that they can sign over to candidates who abide by certain rules. Proponents say the vouchers counter big money in politics by involving people who otherwise wouldn't donate and by helping lesser-known candidates compete. Seattle residents spent $1.14 million in vouchers last year. On Czech News, stolen lawnmower used to create male genitalia into elementary school field in Saanich, witness says. Typically, a riding lawnmower is used to trim the grass, but sometime July 9th, someone broke into the Gordon Head baseball shed at Lambrick Park and stole a John Deere lawnmower. Fred Fernando came in early July 10th to work at the field. He was one of the men who found the lawnmower left by a pile of dirt. He reported it to the police after seeing what was carved into the grass. He says it wasn't just donuts. Let's just say, because we have a family audience, that there was a Long John. And last week in the Breaker.News, these headlines. New sewage plant in limbo, but project could be refloated at a much higher price. Police called to disturbance at hospice 4 days after city council rejected controversial Shaughnessy townhouses. And no conflict of interest for Vancouver councillor who sought public feedback on her website. Go to thebreaker.news and read the stories behind these headlines. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Joining us from Victoria on this edition is Dermid Travis of the Independent Government Watchdog Integrity BC. Never before has the Union of British Columbia Municipalities Convention sparked so much controversy in July. The convention isn't until the third week of September. Port Coquitlam Mayor Brad West wants to cancel the $6,000 sponsorship from the Chinese government and cancel the Chinese government's cocktail party for politicians. West is concerned with China's human rights record, and he opposes foreign government lobbying. Dermid, was it right for the UBCM to sign up China to begin with?
It's never been right for the UBCM to do it, and I think one of the key indicators of that is that there's only one foreign government that is a sponsor, and it's the government of China. And you don't see foreign governments acting in a similar capacity with similar organizations across the country. This is a one-off backroom special deal for the government of China, a country with one of the most deplorable human rights records in the world, being allowed to wine and dine our elected officials across British Columbia. And certainly they spare no expense. It's not just the $6,000 sponsorship that goes into the pockets of the UBCM. You're looking at the cost of the catering that the government's going to put on for that event. And certainly when they were in Victoria at the Union Club, all reports would indicate that that particular reception probably had a fairly hefty price tag for the government.
On July 1st, Richmond's Mayor Malcolm Brody and Liberal MP Joe Pesciolito were just a few of the politicians at a Canada Day event hosted by the Canadian Alliance of Chinese Associations. The Consul General for China was a featured guest. Was it right for Brody to have attended this event?
I think all politicians, and particularly those that have large Chinese-Canadian constituents, have a large base of Canadian-Chinese constituents, need to be very cautious about the groups that they align with. And I think, one, a tip of the hat to many of the Canadian-Chinese citizens who are opposing what's currently taking place in Hong Kong related to the since-withdrawn extradition legislation that the government of China had proposed. And that should be a message to Mayor Brody that each group that comes forward to invite the mayor to invite council to an event needs to have appropriate scrutiny put to it, just as non-Chinese organizations have to face when they make requests of councils in Canada. You do not simply rubber stamp every request that comes in. And I think that the mayor in Richmond, and regrettably in the past, many of the council members have followed the mayor's lead, has not shown the adequate leadership to ensure that he maintains the independence of his position and the independence of council in Richmond, so that there is not this constant concern about which groups he's aligning himself with and de facto aligning the municipality with.
Politicians at all levels stereotype the Chinese community, but it turns out it's very diverse and includes the Hong Kongers, the Taiwanese, and even refugees from mainland China.
And those Chinese citizens who fled mainland China for a free society probably are absolutely astounded that what they fled is what the mayor seeks at every opportunity. I think that one of the things that governments can do in free societies is they can promote the values of those societies, and they promote those values by who they choose to be seen with, who they choose as an organization to speak to, what invitations they accept, what invitations they reject. And I think one of the interesting challenges that I would put to any mayor, such as Mayor Brody, is will you issue a proclamation on behalf of the Uyghur community once a year to recognize their rights in China, for the Tibet community, for the Falun Gong as well? And if you're not prepared to put your money where your mouth is when it comes to those three key constituencies within China, then you're saying even more with your presence at groups and associations that are aligned with the government of China.
When the BC NDP reformed campaign finance laws in 2017, they only went halfway. The UBCM convention will include a debate on various new policy proposals. For instance, North Vancouver District's Jim Hansen wants councillors to disclose all of their individual donors. The new law bans corporations and unions from donating, but the head of a corporation and the head of a union can still donate under their own name.
What needs to be underlined here is that new to British Columbia, not necessarily new to other provinces. I think it's not just an issue for the UBCM to seize. It's an issue for the government of British Columbia to put in the community charter, which is we have to catch up with other provinces in the country when it comes to ethical codes of conduct for local politicians. I had lobbied before and will continue to lobby on the position that your employer should be identified when you make a donation to a political party. It does not necessarily have to be publicly released, but certainly it needs to be available for researchers, for journalists, for others who may want to inspect patterns of donations that don't seem to quite jive with other donations that a candidate is receiving. And certainly one of the things that I noticed in going through the 2018 returns from candidates across Metro Vancouver and Vancouver Island, some of the interior communities, is you have individuals who have very, very, very unique names who all happen to work for the same employer. And when you see that, not just one or two names, but a dozen names working for the same property developer, donating to the same candidates that property developer has previously indicated a favorable disposition towards. You see the same checks in the same amounts going out on the same days from the same 12 who have never donated to a political party before in British Columbia until the new rules came into place. It causes you to wonder whether or not that was their money, or, as we saw with SNC-Lavalin, they were reimbursed by their employer at a later date, and SNC-Lavalin had to enter into a compliance agreement with Elections Canada over that and pled guilty to the charges when they finally arose in court, preventing a lot of the evidence that could have come out about those particular political donations at the federal level. it would not surprise me at all to see that some of those same patterns happened in British Columbia in this last election cycle. I'm also struck by the large amount of corporate donations that came in prior to the ban, particularly in the 2 months prior to the ban. But I'm also interested in some of them going back 6 or 7 months, and the fact that I've only seen reference to one donation being returned as a result of having the wrong date on the check. I think what Elections BC is going to have to look at is not the date on the check, but the date the check cleared the bank. And they may not necessarily be the same particular month, possibly not even the same particular year. And these situations, in terms of the corporate donations in 2017, there was over $40,000 in corporate donations, believe it or not, in 2018 that are appearing on the list. And in terms of the number of donations, the number one violator in that would be Coalition Vancouver. In terms of the dollar amounts, it would be the Burnaby Citizens Association. But what you do see is that 80% of the corporate donations that are recorded in the local election donors database at Elections BC, 80% came from property developers.
In Richmond, Councillor Kelly Green wants a municipal conflict of interest commissioner and new financial disclosure requirements, so that we can know what the children, siblings, spouse, and parents of a politician own and owe. Dermot, why is this important?
Well, I think they're important because what we've seen at the federal level, at the provincial level, is you have a conflict of interest legislation that only applies to the member. In Alberta, our neighboring province, it applies not only to immediate family members, as the council member is suggesting, in Richmond, but also to known close associates of the member. And without that broad reach, you simply are giving an opportunity to individuals who may not have sufficient ethical boundaries to take advantage of the elected office that they may fortunately or luckily be able to hold. We've already seen in the township of Langley concerns raised over a newly elected council member there, Mr. Woodward, who is the owner of statehood properties, and concerns over his possible redevelopment in the township of Langley. These are the types of things that need to be sufficiently addressed in a proper, thorough code of conduct, which is what other members of elected councils and legislatures in Canada have already had to deal with. There's not going to be any striking loss of people wanting to run for public office because there are more stringent conflict of interest rules. And certainly when you look at what FINTRAC is now implementing when it comes to politically exposed persons in Canada in terms of issues surrounding corruption and money laundering, it's a natural step for the government to take of bringing in conflict of interest legislation across the province for local council members. It applies to their family as well as to immediate business associates, so that there can be no doubt in the public's mind that these possible areas of conflict of interest have been captured, and at the same time that there is a mechanism for the public to be able to confirm whether or not a conflict of interest has taken place. And today, even with what legislation is in place, the ability for the government, for the public to determine whether or not an actual conflict of interest has occurred is minimal at best, and certainly councils put up as many obstructions to that as possible to ensure that the public learns as little as possible, and ideally is the last to learn anything if there is something to learn.
That was Dermot Travis, Executive Director of Integrity BC, joining me from Victoria.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways. And that we were able to make a determination to move forward on the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion last June, a few weeks ago, was very important. But it was also really important for me to come out and make that announcement here in Alberta. It's really important to me as Prime Minister that I be saying the same things right across the country. And coming out here to talk about not just the pipeline expansion, but our need to have a serious plan to fight climate change is something that all Canadians need to hear. I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the police officers who peacefully arrested a man wielding a knife outside the North Vancouver Provincial Courthouse on July 10th. You can see exclusive footage on the Breaker.News of this dramatic incident. There were tense moments as 10 or so police officers in military gear and high-powered rifles stood on 23rd Street facing the man who was pacing on the courthouse steps. They eventually swarmed and disarmed the man, arresting him under the Mental Health Act. Eyewitnesses had feared a much different outcome. Thanks to Eric from Spruce Hill Contracting for the news tip. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of July 14th, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on July 14th in 1874, it was the Chicago Fire? 47 acres of the Windy City burned, 812 buildings were destroyed, and 20 people were killed. The insurance industry demanded changes. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.